Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's story is a listener suggestion. Thank you to friend of the show, John, for bringing Kellyanne's story to my attention. This is a more well-known story. However, it is an important one to tell. To bring to light that victims of domestic violence may be isolated from loved ones. So please make sure you are checking in on those who matter to you. This episode also comes with a second listener discretion warning. This is one of the worst cases of torture and murder that is out there. So please, if you are sensitive to more graphic type stories, please give this one a skip. I'm rambling now because I'm delaying what is going to happen today. Happened to a beautiful young woman with a future ahead of her, but was taken far too soon in the worst possible way. The murder of Kellyanne Bates stands out as one of the most horrifying and tragic cases in British history. She was a bright and outgoing young woman who fell victim to a sadistic killer who subjected her to unimaginable cruelty. Her death not only shocking a nation, but also highlighting the dangers of domestic violence and the importance of recognising the signs of controlling relationships. This is Kellyanne's story. Kellyanne Bates was born May 18, 1978 in Hattersley, England, to parents Margaret and Tommy Bates. Kellyanne would later be described as a bit of a tomboy. She had two older brothers and was most definitely influenced by them and could definitely hold her own with them. Kellyanne had aspirations of becoming a teacher when she grew up. Kellyanne was described by those who knew and loved her as sporty and social, very kind and smart, an old soul that was a nurturer at heart. She loved helping people and making them feel important. James Patterson Smith was living in the Gorton area of Manchester. He was both unemployed and divorced. He divorced his first wife in 1980 after a 10-year marriage. His wife, Janice Anderson, ending the relationship due to severe physical violence. Smith was known to be excessively paranoid, and then that paranoia turned into very serious jealousy, which we know isn't healthy. But Smith would use this as an excuse for his abuse, blaming his wife for the beatings he would give her. In 1980, 33-year-old James Patterson Smith would start his next romance with 20-year-old Tina Watson, so 13 years his junior. And here we see the start of Smith's penchant towards much younger women. Tina would later testify that during their relationship, Smith would treat her like a punching bag. Even after Tina became pregnant with their child, quote, "At first it was now and then, just a little tap. But in the end, it was every day he would smack me in the face or hit me over the head with an ashtray. He would kick me in the legs or between the legs." Unquote. It all came to a head when Smith tried to drown Tina in the bathtub. Now, thankfully, Tina was able to escape this relationship with her life. She survived the attack and was able to separate herself from Smith. I want to say she was lucky, but that kind of undermines the situation. Tina was strong. She was a survivor and she did what she needed to do. She reached her breaking point and she escaped. It wouldn't have been easy, but she did it. Smith would continue the pattern, however. His next relationship was with 15-year-old Wendy Mottishead. Smith would not learn from his mistakes, and he also tried drowning Wendy in the kitchen sink by holding her head under the water. Thankfully, yet again, Wendy survived this attack. She was able to end this relationship and separate herself from this absolute piece of shit. She was another victim that everyone is happy survived. But tragically, Smith's next victim would be his last and she would not be so lucky. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. James Patterson Smith was what you would call house proud. He took a lot of pride in how his house looked. Everything needed to look pristine at all times. Smith was also very well groomed. He never smoked and he never drank alcohol, never touched a drop of alcohol. He wanted to give off that persona of perfection. 1993. Smith meets 14-year-old Kellyanne Bates. To earn some extra pocket money, Kellyanne would babysit for the neighbourhood children. And this is how Kellyanne and Smith crossed paths. Kellyanne was babysitting one of Smith's friends, and he happened to be there one day when she babysat. Smith offered to walk Kellyanne home under the guise to make sure she got home safely, because he is such a good guy. Apparently, during the walk, the two got talking and realised they had a lot in common. A grown-ass man and a barely teenage girl, sure. But Smith took a liking to Kellyanne and he decided he was going to groom her. And unfortunately, Kellyanne took to this. She got wrapped up in the compliments and the attention. Kelly did nothing wrong here. She was manipulated because she was just a child and Smith was in a position of power. He love-bombed her and showed Kellyanne the attention she was yet to experience. And slowly, he set his plan into action to isolate her from everyone who wanted the best for Kellyanne. Literally brainwashing her until she feels all she can trust and rely on is her groomer. 2 years later, Smith and Kellyanne would announce they were a couple. Kellyanne was working at a graphics firm to make some extra money for a college program that she was enrolled in, which would in turn help her get into the teacher training course. What everyone wouldn't know was the two had been seeing each other in secret the entire time. No one knew, not even Kellyanne's best friends or parents. But in late 1995, 16-year-old Kellyanne would bring Smith home to meet her family. Kellyanne would then surprise everyone and ended up leaving school completely, all so she could spend more time with Smith. Kellyanne spending her days at the funeral home Smith owned in Gorton. Now remember, Kellyanne was extremely driven before all of this. All she had wanted since she was a little girl was to be a teacher. She was enrolled in a college course to make that happen and she was working hard. But she threw all of that away for this unhealthy romance with Smith. Kellyanne's mother, Margaret Bates, was horrified to not only be meeting her very young daughter's boyfriend, but then to find out that he looked like he was in his 40s. Smith was 45 years old at this point. Kellyanne had been minimalising their relationship and also downplaying the age gap. That he was just a little older, but didn't actually admit to how much older he was. And this is really interesting to me, because despite Kellyanne's young age, she knew that something was wrong with this relationship. Otherwise, she wouldn't have felt like she needed to keep it all a secret. Things would move quickly after this, and by November 1995, Kellyanne would have officially moved in with Smith. After this point, Kellyanne would only return home after an argument with Smith. And when her parents did see her, she was covered in bruises. But like many domestic violence victims do, Kellyanne downplayed them or said that they were an accident or blamed herself. But by the end of 1995, Kellyanne quit her part-time job and became more and more withdrawn from her family and friends. Margaret was obviously very worried about her daughter, but she didn't go to the authorities, unfortunately. And I can understand why. It was the 1990s and Kellyanne was above the age of consent. Kellyanne wasn't forthcoming with wanting to leave the relationship. She wasn't missing. There was no real proof that she was in any danger because she was covering for Smith as to what was really going on behind closed doors. She wasn't going to admit to police he was abusing her. There would have been nothing police would have done even if Margaret went to report her concerns about her daughter. Sadly, really, time hasn't changed too much. I still don't believe police would have really done anything apart from a welfare check, if they even would have done that. Christmas and New Year would come and go without a visit from Kellyanne. She would call them once a week, but her parents didn't actually set eyes on her. March 1996. Kellyanne's parents would receive two cards, supposedly from their daughter. One for her father Tommy's birthday and one for their wedding anniversary. But when they opened the cards, Kellyanne hadn't written in either, only Smith. But it was signed off as if it was from both of them. Now, of course, Margaret and Tommy were both very concerned and extremely suspicious at this point. they sent their eldest son over to Smith's home on Furnival Road to try and check on his sister. In another source, I also read that Kellyanne's brother had heard from a friend that they had seen Kellyanne recently and that she was fine. So Margaret and Tommy didn't do anything, thinking that this friend had just seen their daughter and she was still okay. However, what we would find out later was that this friend hadn't seen Kelly recently. In fact, it was actually 3 months earlier, in early December 1995. Regardless, Kellyanne's brother went to make sure his sister was doing okay. But Smith would answer the door and tell him that Kellyanne wasn't home. Around the same time, a neighbour would also go over to their house because they hadn't seen her around for some time. Smith didn't bring Kellyanne to the door, but pointed her out in an upstairs window. Now, I'm not sure why at this point there wasn't at least some reports to police, because huge red flags that no one was allowed to see Kellyanne. All of that points to there is something very, very wrong. April 16th, 1996. James Patterson Smith went into a local police station to tell them he had accidentally killed his girlfriend. That they were having an argument and Kellyanne was in the bathtub. That Kellyanne had gone under and inhaled the water. That he had tried to resuscitate her, but these attempts had been unsuccessful. That he said he wasn't initially moved to call emergency services because he thought she was joking, and she would often pretend she was unconscious to mess with him. Now, all of this astounds me because given how Kellyanne's body would be found, the condition her body was in, I don't know in what universe Smith would think that anyone would believe her death was an accident. And here is your warning now to maybe skip the next 5 minutes if you're sensitive to graphic descriptions of violence. As always, I don't go into unnecessary details. However, it is important to understand just what Smith subjected Kellyanne to before her death. It is truly heartbreaking and disturbing. And then he tried to sweep it all under the rug like an accidental drowning. When it is very, very clear, very quickly, this was definitely not an accident. Police would attend the home Smith and Kelly were living at. They found 17-year-old Kellyanne naked and dead in a bedroom. Her blood was throughout the entire house. The post-mortem would reveal over 150 injuries on her body. It is believed that for at least a month she had been tied up, often to a radiator or to the furniture by her hair. Other times she was tied by a ligature around her neck. Dr. William Lawler would be the medical examiner responsible for the autopsy. And in his report, quote, "In my career, I have examined almost 600 victims of homicide, but I have never come across injuries so extensive," unquote. Kellyanne had scalding burns, likely from boiling water, on her buttocks and left leg. She had burns on her thigh that was found to be caused by a hot iron. She had a fractured arm. Multiple stab wounds on her body from various objects, such as scissors, knives and forks. Kellyanne had stab wounds inside of her mouth. She had crush injuries on both of her hands. Her kneecaps had been destroyed. Kellyanne's ears, nose, genitals, eyebrows, mouth and lips had all been mutilated. She had wounds from a spade and pruning shears. She was partially scalped. But that's not even the worst of it. The worst of it is that when they found Kellyanne, her eyes had both been gouged out. There were stab wounds in her eye sockets that had been found to have been committed after her eyes had been removed. But he didn't remove Kellyanne's eyes after he killed her. The pathologist determined that the eyes had been removed long before Kellyanne had died. That it could have been as short as 5 days before she died, but it could have been as long as 3 weeks. Before Kellyanne died, she lost about 44 pounds, or around 20 kilograms. She had not been given water for several days. It was determined the official cause of death was drowning. She had been beaten by a showerhead, likely until she was unconscious and then she drowned. After finding Kellyanne in that state, the police went to Kellyanne's parents' house to tell them the horrifying news. Margaret and Tommy were absolutely devastated. Margaret would later state in interviews that despite the shock and grief she was feeling in this moment, she was not completely surprised, that deep down she knew this day was coming. If this story could not get any worse, James Patterson Smith would plead not guilty and would go to trial. His defence was it was all Kellyanne's fault. that he was just an innocent bystander in this whole situation. That Kellyanne made him torture her for weeks, possibly months, and then murder her. Smith would claim that Kellyanne would, quote, put me through hell winding me up, unquote. That Kellyanne had a habit of self-harm to make him look bad, given his track record in past relationships. He then claimed that Kellyanne dared him to blind, stab and mutilate her. That she would challenge him to beat her. Now, even if, and it's a big if, but if Kellyanne did taunt and challenge him to do any of this to her, he is a grown man and she is still very young at 17 years old when she died. He had free will to say no and to get his partner psychological help for why they want that done to them. Given Smith's track record, it made more sense he was guilty as sin. He was extremely abusive throughout his life, most likely getting some sick enjoyment out of torturing someone who was so dependent on him. The prosecution called upon consultant psychiatrist Gillian Mezzi to testify at the criminal trial. She told the court that she believed Smith to have a, quote, severe paranoid disorder with morbid jealousy, unquote, and that he lived in a distorted reality. That Smith deliberately disfigured Kellyanne, causing her the utmost pain, distress and degradation. That there was no way the injuries could have been the result of one sudden eruption of violence. That they must have been caused over a long period and were so extensive and so terrible. That Smith must have deliberately and systematically tortured Kellyanne. It took the jury only 1 hour to deliberate. James Patterson Smith was found guilty for 17-year-old Kellyanne Bates' gruesome torture and murder. All members of the jury that had to sit through the horrific evidence in this case were offered professional counselling and excused from ever having to sit on a jury again. November 1997. Smith was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum of 20 years. Mr. Justice Sachs addressing Smith in sentencing, quote, "This has been a terrible case, a catalogue of depravity by one human being upon another. You are a highly dangerous person. You are an abuser of women. And I intend, as far as it is in my power, that you will never abuse again." Unquote. Thankfully, Smith remains in prison until this day. He is now currently in his late 70s. He has been before the parole board a number of times, but has been declined freedom each and every time. With any luck, he will die painfully behind bars. Kellyanne's family spoke out after the trial about their experience, urging others to be vigilant and to take action if they suspect a loved one may be involved in an abusive situation. They also called out for stronger legal protections for young people in relationships with significantly older partners, particularly when there are signs of coercion and control. Kellyanne should have had her whole future ahead of her, filled with so much promise and happiness and opportunity. Instead, her life was taken by a man who sought to control and destroy her. Her story is a tragic testament to the consequences of unchecked abuse, and a call to action for society to do more to protect the vulnerable from those who would do them harm. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.